Welcome to Matters of Experience, a podcast produced by Laura Mipsum, an experience design company headquartered in New York City. Our podcast explores the creativity, innovation, and psychology driving designed experiences and encounters. If you're new, a hearty welcome to our regular listeners. Thanks for tuning in and supporting our conversation. My name is Abigail Honor.
Hello, everyone. This is Brenda Cowan.
So, Brenda, today we're speaking with Elizabeth Ram, who is an associate partner at Atelier Bruckner and a lecturer at various art schools in Europe, as well as the co-founder of Swiss-based Art Thinking Association. Elizabeth designs and crafts theatrical and scenographic spatial concepts for museums and brands worldwide, leveraging a broad spectrum of strategies and techniques drawn from theatre, film, exhibition, and art to translate complex narratives holistically, immersively, and artistically into physical space. Elizabeth, it sounds like we really have a lot in common.
Yeah, so some kindred experience.
Very excited to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so very much for having me tonight. It's an honor. I'm in Europe. It's 10 o'clock in the evening. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks
oh my
for
goodness.
Staying up. But I know for you, this must be normal as you work around the globe. When do you ever sleep?
Actually, I have to get some sleep, obviously, you know, so I'm a mother as well. So, you know how that works. So you try to, you know, combine various different aspects in life, you know.
Well,
but, yeah.
That's actually a perfect segue into where we wanted to really begin, thinking about all of the different techniques that you use, as Abby mentioned, drawn from various disciplines like theater and film. What was your experience with all of these different kinds of art forms before joining Atelier Bruckner?
Actually, it was, I would say, basically through my biography. My father is as a classical musician, and I've been born in the former Eastern Germany part. And he was introducing me actually to classical music. So I learned the violin, and then I was studying classical violin. And then as I saw or eventually realized that I have other, well, maybe interests, I kind of terminated this. And then I went to Zurich. This was really a time when a digital revolution really actually happened. So I did my bachelor's in media art. And then since I always wanted to kind of stage and really, well, see what spatial impact also ideas and storytelling could have, I then back in the time when scenography was not really so evolved, I decided to, well, to go into theater directing. And so I did my master's in this one. And so I had kind of really a broad overview. And then of course, I thought, okay, what now? What to do with all of these kind of, you know, aspects? And then I discovered actually that there is something like scenography and exhibition design. And then I really found, I have to say, I found my home in this approach because it's so interdisciplinary. There are so many things that are coming together that intersect storytelling. I mean, you know it yourself, yeah. Content and then spatial imagery and experiences that are being laid out or being designed. So I think this really kind of fits me and suits me.
What was it when you were directing theatre that wasn't enough for you personally as Elizabeth? What sort of drove you into museums and exhibition design?
Actually, I think it's a different media that I could take advantage of, the different experiences that I could create. And I think most of all that visitors in an exhibition actually choose their own way. They choose their own path. So it's not that you put visitors in front of a narration and then something happens and they have to listen to this. So they freely explore what is coming. So there is a level of suspense. Yeah. And as I said, you can work with graphic design, you know, all kinds of, you know, media that you can take advantage of in so many different ways, only in one exhibition. And I think this kind of variety of experience creation, that was for me quite interesting.
We talk about storytelling, you use the word a lot on the show, Brenda, right? For me, it's about a drama, protagonist, antagonist, what's sort of the struggle and hopefully the positive or nuanced outcome. And how do we tell the key chapters in the story in this authentic, engaging, immersive way? And we always start, at Laura Mipsum, we start with a story structure before designing, you know, and diving into the design aspect of it. And we like to get our guests' perspective on what storytelling is for them in their work. Can you talk to us a little bit about your process and when you say storytelling, what you mean?
Yeah, it's interesting because it means, you know, for different people, different things. And so we kind of try to apply the idea of a dramaturgy in space also to our work. So, you know, like where is the peak point? Where are the high points? So how are we kind of guiding visitors around? But I would say storytelling is for us strongly also comes from content. So we would analyze what is there. Yeah. So what is really the body of content? What are the messages that we want to convey? And how can we derive motives out of this kind of content clusters or however? And then from there, kind of create, of course, always from the other end coming, thinking of experiences. So, you know, what is our target audience, for example, and what would they expect? Or also what we would like to, you know, dive into. And of course, a storyline can be a chronology. It can be a thematic order. You know, it can follow different kind of principles, I would say. It can also be interrupted. So you can have breakouts, for example. So let's say before maybe things were more didactic and then suddenly you have something where you break out into something totally emotional. But we of course also then think from the end of the space. Yeah. So what really actually tells the architecture, what is the space and the shell that we are doing this in?
You're describing such an incredible landscape to us right now, really giving us an idea of just how rich and full of drama and possibility your spaces are. And one of the things that Abby and I are hoping to be able to focus on with you today is your work in science. And we're really curious to hear, how do you apply these different elements of storytelling and create an exciting designed environment that conveys science concepts?
That is a very interesting question, because that is, I would say, reflects a challenge that we are currently facing, because we are at the moment are assigned to, well, eventually create a science center. But the target audience for this one is elementary school kids until, I would say, teens or, you know, like late teens. And one thing that for us was important is to think of, okay, I mean, science is, or science museums are really kind of fostering, I would say, problem solving, critical thinking, you know, engineering, you know, all this kind of natural scientific kind of ideas. But at the same time, we were wondering, okay, we are, in a very special times right now. So we are facing numerous challenges, as we all know, climate change, you know, migration, food security, energy, and so on and so forth. And what kind of skill set do we want youngsters to have to possess? What can we foster through our exhibition, and what do we have? And for us, one key aspect in this entire kind of setting was the idea of creativity. So the ability eventually to make youngsters, acquaint them with creative thinking, with, you know, like methods that they can not learn, but, you know, kind of experience. So to really be able to think out of the box and to come up with ideas that eventually, hopefully, a bit kind of shape the world or however.
That's a big responsibility. That's
really
fascinating, like to actually be able to change the way that the visitor thinks in order to be able to learn about who they are and the way that they work, actually to change their process of learning.
And at a really particular age too, mm-hmm. if we're thinking developmentally, you've really got such an ideal sort of age range within the course of human development to be able to really reach young people at a time when they're formulating ideas and just starting to really understand
Exactly. Right,
the world beyond their door.
But does that mean then, are you thinking about how often does one person, one of these kids come? Because to really affect change, probably once isn't enough. So is there going to be, and this is early because you haven't concepted, I get it, but is there any thinking towards before the student comes in and then after the student's left?
Absolutely. I think what is really key in general is that an institution, however, wherever, is really grown and rooted within not only a community, but also its location, and that it grows with its visitors and with its audience. So, you know, that when you come, you know, as eventually a teen, you remember how it was when you were a kid. And then, you know, eventually you would even come, you know, as an adult and remember that. And then also, you know, mirror the experience eventually, even in a digital realm, so that you always have a connecting point. And that, I mean, of course, you know, pre-communication, post-communication, all of this is very important. But I think really to create an institution that lasts. So that does not only give you a one-time experience, but where you can always come and see something new or something different.
So you just returned from the Excite conference, where exhibition educators, makers, designers came together to discuss all things experience, exhibitions, science, and storytelling. I know that there was an element of the conference that really struck you as important as it related to the question of whether natural phenomena need storytelling or scenography at all. This is a sort of a controversial discussion about whether, for example, natural phenomena speak for themselves or speak for itself, or if setting up a narrative interpretation is essential. So where do you fall in this discussion, Elizabeth?
That was very, very interesting. Very interesting lecture, I have to say. There were many, many workshops in this Excite conference. And this one was really, that was outstanding, because the already kind of the announcement of the session was interesting. So the announcement goes like this. So some science centers use effects like colors, signage, materials to give visual similarities for a space. But some science centers have decided to go further and implement extensive scenography in an effort to tell stories and create immersive experiences for the visitors. But does this actually have the intended effect, or is it just an expensive distraction for our visitors, which also delays our projects? So this is how actually they were framing it. And I thought, okay, this should be interesting. And it was really a vivid discussion about whether or not this makes sense. And they had to kind of install this or in the scenery of really a trial. And there were, I would say, people from FANO and from other science centers in Switzerland that would say, no, they stick to this. This makes sense. And this is absolutely the right approach. And then, of course, you know, there was me, like a scenographer, standing up and saying, you know, my son just asked me the other day, Mama, why are we actually not falling off the earth? And I thought about this question, because this is such a deep and, you know, multi-layered question that really, in my opinion, requires storytelling. And in an extent, it also requires scenography to be contextualized, to be understood. Because what in the end is science? Science is nature, and nature is science. But to really understand the complexity and the simplicity at the same time, yeah, of natural phenomena, I think in this case really strongly needs embedding, and their scenography, of course, strongly can help. So I was super, super, super pro scenography, of course.
I am completely on the side of scenography and embedding phenomena within a story to gain access. And I think especially because it can enable a person to go deeper and then a little bit deeper and then a little bit deeper. You can feed people as they're exploring in their own way. But when you have a very rich context that is built out, you know, not just visually or sensorially, but also through layers of content, through emotional experience, you can really reach so many more people, I think. So I'm with you, Elizabeth. Elizabeth, let's talk about the history and some of the differences between STEM and STEAM. And what do they mean to you as it relates to experience design?
Yeah. So STEM, basically, I believe, was introduced in the 2000, early 2000 years. And STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. So 10 years later, you know, like another kind of shift of mindset appears, like a little bit of an evolution. And suddenly we find between the E and the M an A that stands for art. So we have STEAM now. And the idea is behind that, and this, of course, is a leap forward, that art, of course, has a profound impact of how we see things. So that is really a shift of perspective. And I think this shift of perspective, that leads then to this eureka moment where you think like, oh, wow, it's not, you know, like a binary thinking where you think, okay, it's black or white, or it's right or wrong, or it's this or that, you know, so it's either or and nothing third. So, you know, to exclude eventually implicit knowledge, to exclude intuition. And I think this is exactly where this A, the art, actually comes in. And of course, you know, there are many institutions that were created then and under the label of STEAM, the Wellcome Collection in London, then the Ars Electronica Center in Linz. You know, there's a fantastic children museum in Vienna as well called Zoom. that is relying totally and fully only on programming. They have a temporary exhibition. But this actually, this art approach that is brought into institutions in many different ways. Yeah, some have art collections suddenly, or they invite artists to do their artistic research. They have residence programs such as the CERN in Switzerland. They have really an artist in residence program. So it's really kind of a cooperation. And also the scientists take great advantage of what the artists actually are doing. So this is really an interesting approach. And for me, one example of how this can be mind-blowing and where it actually makes a difference is of a fungus. So there's an art institution in Switzerland where a friend of mine was actually the co-director, and they also had an artist in residence program. And as it happens, in the Swiss National Park, there was a gigantic fungus being found in the year 2004, and it was one of the largest living organisms, and it was also very old. So it was 1,000 years old. And this very fungus, of course, leads now to, you know, a vast amount of topics and themes, you know. So this is really as a starting point to think about eventually interconnectedness and symbiosis of, you know, like hidden networks and communication, adaptation and resilience. So also to take this one kind of thing, you know, and really explore different realities, to really shift perspective around this kind of idea. This, I think, for me, is really a great example of how to bring in, or how what STEAM actually can do with thinking and with scientific, well, binary thinking between right and wrong. So really kind of bringing in a multi-dimensional reality.
I'm so excited. I want to go.
And it also just gets, as you're talking about, it makes me excited to want to learn and go see and understand. And the more you understand about the fungus, the more you understand about humanity, because we're all interrelated and interconnected. And it's just exactly where science museums should be.
You know, I'd love to add a layer of complexity to the dialogue right now and get back to how it is that we are addressing, through our design, through our experiences, through our science centers, the big challenges that are facing the world right now. And I'm thinking about, you know, specifically climate change as being an area of science that so many science centers are approaching. How is it, Elizabeth, that you can bring an audience into the complexity of what our planet is facing today? Like, what kind of thinking do we need? And how do we move forward? How do you instill a sense of hope, opportunity, possibility through your designed environments?
Well, first of all, exactly what you said, a sense of hope and possibility. I think, you know, from a conceptual kind of level, this is exactly where we try to pick young minds up, because it's not about that they solve our problems or, you know, become, they have the burden of to become a game changer. So it's exactly this, to ignite the idea of, you know, there is something that we have to face, but as well, you know, there is an opportunity of invention. It's a challenge, and we should tackle this challenge. So I can answer with a different example I just saw. In the Futurium, in the Future Museum in Berlin, there was a really interesting installation, very, very large. So you would walk into a space and there were this gigantic neo-nature sculptures. Yeah, so they would be out of wood, and they at the moment would serve as exhibition canvas, or, you know, like, how to say, so with objects and graphic and everything. So they were functional, but at the same time, they were very artistic, and they were very space-filling and very, very prominent and super immersive. And the idea of neo-nature is something where technology, humanity, or human, so the human approach, this human design approach, as well as an idea of nature, so the Anthropocene, the age of man, where we anyways, you know, shape our environment, but to kind of find new possibilities to do so. So to create environments and shapes and shells, parametric architecture, for example, would be another example of this. So to really actually within the intersection of technology and art, art and design and the human approach really create shapes and forms that are different, that are very aesthetic, but also kind of, you know, blend in nature in a different way and therefore become sustainable. So in this one, to really kind of, you know, have an option and have a possibility and really a creative and interesting potential to design and to create. And I think this is something that is very, you can embrace this, yeah? And it's fun and it.
So for some of our listeners thinking about designing spaces like you use light, you use sound, you use color, really to create this expansive atmospheres where landscapes of imagination can flourish and grow. What practical advice can you give some of our listeners to sort of solve problems, design these exhibits with all of these tools that you need to use? Have you got any advice? Because sometimes it can be overwhelming.
I honestly think, coming from theater, you know, let's say suspense or an atmosphere, an experience can be created everywhere, anywhere, with, I think, little means. For me, it's always light and sound, for example. So sound is really, it's really important. It's quite often underestimated. And then certain, I would say, also narration, a story. You can create, I would say, a spatial landscape only through a story, a well-told story, a good narration, really an audio play, you know, that is eventually heard in the space or whatever, can already set a certain spatial atmosphere, as we know. And then it becomes theatrical or it becomes immersive, because eventually you dive into the story, you see the images within your mind, you know, you fill out the space with your own imagination. So I'm not sure if it always takes this, you know, kind of big, super scenographic kind of imagery. So I think the story or atmospheric means or displays are very easily being achieved.
Elizabeth, I'm an educator in exhibition and experience design. And in my work, I'm highly invested in supporting emerging exhibition and experience designers, developers, leaders. How do you leverage your own talents and your own work to bolster the next generation?
For me, what is interesting is to see them coming up with their ideas, with their, you know, different approaches. And then, because I see myself not really as a teacher, I see myself more as an amplifier, more as a muse. So I try to listen, you know, very carefully of what they actually come up with. And then I try to inspire them with links, with, you know, references, with, yeah, an inspirational kind of ideas. And then, of course, I would never, you know, hold back to revealing that there's also a methodology. So there's a process, yes. When I was studying theater, I remember that everything was a mystery. Yeah. So how you design a storyline, how everything kind of then comes together until the very, you know, premiere and the opening night. And of course, there is a methodology that can be learned. How far you then actually break the rules, that is then the question of, you know, creativity and, you know, like really. So first, you know, to learn the frame and then kind of to throw it away. But so I would say it's like, it's both. It's always kind of letting them go and then kind of, you know, getting them back through telling them how I actually do things, but also, you know, enjoy listening. I really enjoy listening.
So you mentioned breaking rules. Can you give us a good example in your work when you broke the rules, which is risky and nerve-wracking, and I'm sure you lost some sleep about it, but you were right to break the rules and you were happy you broke the rules, just so our designers can understand that sometimes taking risks is a good thing.
Yeah, I think what is always a critical point is when there is no reference yet. We are surrounded, as we all know, yeah, by a lot of images. Pinterest is the perfect example of this. So the question is if we, you know, not kind of only procreate, or, you know, is if there is a constant evolution of, you know, an idea that evolves into a like slightly different idea. And then there are 20 images of the same idea, you know, and then you just say, okay, let's take that idea. So I think whenever, and this happens in every project for everyone, I think, when the part of innovation is coming in. So when you have an idea, but there is not a mood image that reflects this idea. So you really have to be profound and, you know, like really specific and say, and you have to explain it, you have to draw it. So for example, I remember, I mean, I was just partly on board in that project, but there was a kinetic sculpture, yeah, that Atelier Brückner developed for the Hyundai Motor Studio. And this kinetic sculpture, which consisted of different poles that were kind of coming out of the, you know, kind of a ground installation, and that were shaping different forms of different cars. And nobody really had an idea how this could work and if it looked cool and if it was good or whatever. And then I think we were very kind of consistent. So you have to be in this kind of case or in this example, really pulled through and to be very strong. And then, of course, you need strong people that say this is a good idea and we believe in this. And then finally, of course, getting through with mock-up and then really doing it and really kind of, you know, yeah, and really getting us through. So I would say the moment of when you try to do something that really has not done before, then a trust relationship with the client and with the entire team is really needed. Yeah.
That's when it gets really fun, right?
Yeah. And trust is something that has come up often in our conversations. How do you approach building trust?
That is a very deep and essential question, honestly. You have to be, again, listening, be very perceptive, be very open, be very adaptable, also be resilient, you know, and show, I would say, the client, because I believe in not colleagueship. I think when you really approach on a project, you have to become accomplices, you know, you have to become slightly more than this. You have to understand that you really are sitting in this one boat together. And you cannot achieve something because somebody thinks you want to, you know, make the money. Yes, as well. But at the same time, I mean, I don't go home at, you know, 5 PM or 6 or whenever, you know, like my profession is what I chose to be actually my life. So I spent my life or part or times of my life, you know, like doing, concerning myself with, let's say, you know, other people's ideas and, you know, requirements and so on. And to kind of let them know I'm doing this voluntarily because I want something here. I think for me, you know, to get this idea across, then ultimately, in my perception, build this kinds of trust. But of course, the other party then accordingly, of course, has to mutually commit to this idea and then also kind of, you know, float along this kind of process.
I think that's a fantastic way of describing it when you say it's a life, it's not a job. And that's exactly how I feel, Elizabeth, that it just, it's so enjoyable, but it's so all-encompassing. You go to sleep thinking about it. You wake up thinking about it. You see things when you're walking through an airport. You see things in the mall.
You make a podcast about
you
it.
You make a podcast about it.
Yeah.
Like you're literally consumed. And so there has to be that passion and that excitement.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Elizabeth, for chatting with us today and for representing immersive experience design around the globe and creating some truly wonderful environments at Atelier Bruckner for us all to learn and enjoy. I'm very excited to see your science center grow. So keep
Absolutely.
Us updated and open its doors to those teenagers and shape those young minds.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun. Thanks.
And thanks to everyone who tuned in today. If you like what you heard, subscribe for more episodes of Matters of Experience. Wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure to leave a rating and a review and share with a friend. We'll see you next time.
Take care, everybody.
Matters of Experience is produced by Lorem Ipsum Corp and recorded at Hangar Studios. Tune in next time for more fun discussions about experience design.